This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. This week on Case Closed, we'll begin our hour of old-time radio crime with Box 13 and Hunt and Peck, their story from March 6th, 1949. After that, it's Unit 99, An Accident at 17th, their story from October 11th, 1957.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. We're allowed newspapers here, and by chance I saw your advertisement. I have exactly 48 hours to live. No more than that, unless you can do something which no one else has been able to do. Get me out of the death cell of the state penitentiary. I was tried and convicted for the murder of one of my best friends.
I was tried and convicted for the murder of one of my best friends. I didn't do it. Will you try to help? Martin Kirby. When I received the letter from Martin Kirby, I wondered how a man felt who had only a short time to live and knew it. Before the thing was over, well, I'd stopped wondering. I knew.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Hunt and Peck.
Gee, Mr. Holliday, what can you do about it?
Susie, I wish I had an answer for you.
You're going to see him, aren't you?
Well, if I don't, I'd kick myself all over the city for not doing what I could. On the other hand, he was tried, convicted, and sentenced.
But it could be wrong.
I know what you mean. Susie, sentencing a man to death is a terrible thing. The evidence against Kirby must have been pretty strong.
Uh-huh, I guess it was. You're on the horns of an Aunt Emma.
Dilemma. This time, Susie, I don't laugh.
What are you going to do?
Well, the only thing I can do, see Martin Kirby and, well, at least listen to him.
I didn't think you'd come, Mr. Holliday.
Why not?
Well, there must have been a million guys in this place. All innocent.
Sure, maybe. Some of them were and are.
I am.
What time? I mean,
I know what you mean. It's 1:30 now. I've got the rest of today and till tomorrow night at 11:30.
34 hours.
I know. I've counted them, too.
All right, Kirby, what can I do?
I don't know.
Is there anything you can tell me, something that didn't come out at the trial?
The only thing that didn't come out at my trial was the fact that I didn't kill Leslie Roberts. Oh, I kept saying it, but there was too much against me. At first, when I got here, I didn't care anymore. If they wanted to see an innocent man die for something he didn't do, then it was murder on their heads. But now, Mr. Holliday, I want to live.
Sure, sure. But there's nothing you can tell me. Anything that I can go to the police with and get a reprieve? A stay of execution?
My lawyer's tried that 100 times. My case has been reviewed. Nothing doing.
Then what you're asking of me is to do what everyone else has failed at.
I guess that's it.
You know, Kirby, it's at times like this that I wish I'd never put that Box 13 ad in the paper.
Meaning there's nothing you'll do?
No, I didn't say that. I'll try, but 34 hours is a short time.
Look, maybe you'll go at this with a fresh slant. Maybe something will hit you that everyone else has missed.
Yeah, maybe. All right, Kirby, it'll take me 2 hours to get back to the city, and, well, if I'm going to do anything, I'll have to do it fast. Driving back to the city, I felt like someone who has to tell a kid there's no Santa Claus. Because I was almost sure that Kirby had no chance. What could I do? The police were no fools. The district attorney must have had an airtight case against Kirby when he went to trial. Well, I'd promised to help, so my first stop in the city was the Star Times, and down to the morgue to read up on the case. It was all there. Whoever covered the case for the Star Times had done a great job of reporting. I looked at my watch. It was 3:45. Martin Kirby had 2 hours and 15 minutes less than the original 34, and all I had done so far was, Well, it was to stack up a pile of newspapers. I started from the beginning, but the story of the murder of Leslie Roberts itself told me nothing. Then I got into the transcript of the trial. It took me 3 hours to read everything carefully. And when I finished, I could have summed up the whole thing just as the prosecutor did.
Gentlemen of the jury, you've heard the testimony in this case. The state has proved the following facts. One, Martin Kirby was desperately in need of money. Two, the deceased, Leslie Roberts, was insured for $100,000. His beneficiaries being the accused, Martin Kirby, and another partner, William Morgan. The double indemnity clause in the insurance policy meant that both Kirby and Morgan would receive $100,000 each. Third point. The accused quarreled with the deceased over Mrs. Roberts, wife of the murdered man. Fourth. We have established the murder weapon. This gun belonged to Martin Kirby. True, the serial numbers were filed off, but scientific work revealed the numbers, and this gun belonged to Martin Kirby. He's admitted it. And thinking to get rid of it, he threw it into a sewer near Leslie Roberts' home. Now, perhaps Mr. Kirby believed the police of this city to be fools. Far from it. Their work has established beyond doubt that Martin Kirby is a murderer.
Oh, sure, it was a good case. I stacked the papers in a pile and left the Star-Times and went down to police headquarters to see Lieutenant Kling.
Sit down, Dan. What's on your mind?
Martin Kirby.
Oh? Why?
I've seen him. He wrote to Box 13.
Oh. He's innocent, huh?
Did you work on the case?
No, Inspector Rawlings handled it. Why?
But you know about it.
Sure. Yeah, I sometimes manage to know what's going on.
Look, Kling, you're a good detective. You've got brains.
I'll buy you malted milk sometime, but you didn't come here to hand me posies.
Do you believe Kirby's guilty?
Yes.
From the evidence?
That's what we base our cases on. It's inherent in the judicial and legal system. Now, what do you want from me, a new system?
I told you I saw Kirby. Kling, he doesn't act like a guilty man.
Oh, now, wait a second.
Who's this?
That's a photograph of Marion Oberling.
So, what am I supposed to do?
Look at her. Nice and sweet, isn't she?
I've never met her.
Oh, but I did. Butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. A smile that would soften up the rock of Gibraltar. Talks like an angel. But she killed a kid to get 35 cents from him. Now, look, you've got a soft heart, Dan. But you've got a tendency to let it run right into your head.
Maybe you're right, Kling, but... But I promised Kirby I'd plug away until time was out. I like to keep promises.
And that's your business, Dan. But why did you come to me?
For any help you could give me?
Which adds up to a big zero.
Kling, I read the transcript of the trial. Kirby was the only suspect.
He had motive, opportunity.
So did Mrs. Roberts and William Morgan.
It was Kirby's gun that put Leslie Roberts in the obituaries.
Someone else could have used it.
So his defense lawyer said. But Kirby couldn't explain how it got into that sewer.
But Kirby called the police when he went to Roberts' house that night and saw Roberts dead.
Sure. We get dozens of cases where the killer tries to play smart. He calls the police, figuring it'll make him look good.
But he had to kill Roberts, run outside, throw the gun into the sewer, then go back inside and call the police.
So?
That's a big chance to take in case someone heard the shot and came to investigate.
Killers take chances, Dan.
Okay. Now, the paper said there was a note from Roberts asking Kirby to come to his house that night.
Yeah. That's why Kirby said he happened to go to Roberts' house that night. The only night in the week that Mrs. Roberts is always out.
The police said Kirby could have typed that note.
Right.
But Kirby's defense lawyer said Roberts could have typed it.
Look, you type a note to me, asking me to meet you. Then what do you do?
What do you mean, what do I do?
You write your signature 9 times out of 10. You don't type it.
So? That means anyone could have typed it.
I know. To get Kirby to Roberts' house.
That's it.
So that was all brought out at the trial. The jury saw it the way the prosecution summed it up. That Kirby typed that note to make it seem as though he was asked to Roberts' place.
But both Mrs. Roberts and Morgan also stood to gain by Roberts' death. Each gets $100,000.
Look, the case is closed. Too many things added up against Kirby.
Sometimes things can be added up wrong. Figures and facts.
You're knocking your head against a stone wall.
So I'll get a headache.
Mm. That's about all.
Okay, I'll carry aspirins with me. But, Say, could I look at that note?
What for?
This is a favor.
Okay, I'll take care of it for you. But I'll give you 6-2 and even that Martin Kirby will be executed tomorrow night at 11:30.
Well, Kling got me the note. So I had it, and so what? All it said was, Marty, be at my house tonight at 8:30. Less. It was typed and had been left in Kirby's typewriter at the office. Susie and I studied it.
What do you expect to get out of it, Mr. Holliday?
I don't know, Susie.
Gee, like you said, anybody could have typed it.
That's right. Kirby denies he did. Nobody can prove Roberts did or didn't. Not now.
Maybe that Mr. Morgan or Mrs. Roberts did.
Uh-huh.
Gee, what if either one of them did it, and they're letting an innocent man be executed? Oh, it wouldn't be a comfortable feeling.
Susie.
What's the matter? Did I say something?
Yeah. Maybe you did, Susie. Maybe you did.
What?
Conscience.
Whose?
Mrs. Roberts and Morgan's.
You mean both of them killed Mr. Roberts?
Mm. Give me that phone book.
Here it is.
Thanks. Roberts. Leslie Roberts.
What are you going to do, Mr. Holliday?
Play a little poker.
You're going to play cards at a time like this?
Not quite. Just a bluff. I'm holding a pair of deuces.
I don't get it.
Hello?
Is this Miss Leslie Roberts?
Yes. Who is this?
Never mind. Just listen. Tomorrow night at 11:30, just 24 hours from now, Martin Kirby will be executed for the murder of your husband.
Who are you? What do you want?
Does your conscience bother you, Mrs. Roberts?
What do you mean by that?
Don't you know, Mrs. Roberts?
Is this some kind of a stupid joke?
Hardly. They're not joking at the state penitentiary. Mrs. Roberts?
Yes?
I know something that can make you uncomfortable, but I'm willing to talk about it.
I don't know what you mean. You're either insane or completely without feeling.
If you're interested, meet me at the corner of Carpenter and Pastel Place at midnight.
And why should I do that?
That's for you to think about, but I think you know already. Now listen carefully. I'll be wearing a light tan top coat, brown felt hat. I'll carry a leather briefcase. Goodbye.
Mr. Holliday, what was that for?
I told you. All I've got is a pair of deuces. Now, I'll make the same call to Morgan, but first, one to Kling.
I'm certainly bewildered.
Don't you ever change. You're wonderful as is.
What did I do?
Nothing at all. Susie, after I make this call to Kling and one to Morgan, I'll either have something to help Martin Kirby or...
Or what?
Or a wonderful notice in the obituary column of the Star Times.
And now back to Hunt and Peck, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
I made the same phone call to William Morgan that I made to Mrs. Roberts. But I tipped Kling to something before I did. At midnight, I was at the corner of Carpenter and Pastel Place waiting. Sure, it was a bluff. But I figured all was fair in this game. 10 minutes went by. No one showed up. Then...
Got a light, bud?
Yeah. Sure.
Thanks.
It's all right.
It's a wonder they wouldn't put streetlights here. Guy could get lost easy.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah. Okay, thanks for the light.
You're welcome.
Okay, Dick. See you tomorrow, then. Good night.
Maybe I played the wrong cards. Maybe no one would show up. It was 20 minutes past midnight. I stepped out of the shadows where I'd been standing. I felt pretty silly, and I knew what Kling would say. I was 20 feet away from the corner, walking slowly, looking up and down the street. There was no one in sight. The lights in the windows of the houses went out slowly, one by one. I was 30 feet away from the corner when...
Dick, is that you?
Hey, that was somebody shooting! Dan, where are you?
Right here, Kling.
Did you get it?
Yeah, on the arm.
Sergeant,
yes, sir.
Give those paper back.
Keep in their houses. Now tell Thompson to take a couple of boys and scour this neighborhood. Find the person who fired that shot.
Whoever it was is the one who should die in Martin Kirby's place.
Yeah, you're an idiot. You set yourself up like a clay pigeon. How's bad? How bad's the arm now?
It's not so deep as well or wide as a church door, but twill do.
How do you like this guy? He gets winged and quotes Shakespeare. Okay, let's get you out of here. Feel better?
Yeah, thanks.
What for?
Who fired the shot?
I don't know.
No luck?
Whoever it was in one of the buildings. And running somebody to ground in that neighborhood takes a squad of men.
Yeah, I was afraid of that.
Okay, so what have you got now? A bullet through your arm?
Kling, Morgan is the real murderer of Leslie Roberts.
Why?
Mrs. Roberts reported my phone call to you, didn't she?
That's right.
But Morgan didn't.
I know that.
So he was afraid it was a blackmailer who knew he killed Roberts. He would have reported my call to you if he had nothing to be afraid of.
Sure, sure. It looks good in your head. But what proof have you got that Morgan fired that shot tonight?
None. But on the strength of it, can't you get a stay of execution for Martin Kirby?
How? I call up and say you got shot. You think it was Morgan. Morgan denies it. No soap, Dan. To get a stay for Kirby, you need positive evidence.
And this hole in my arm doesn't count?
Only as a strike against you. And you're lucky at that.
What do I have to do?
If you could prove Morgan fired that shot, you'd have something. But what you'd have is that he fired at you. Not that he killed Roberts. Say so, swear out a warrant, and we'll bring him in.
No. Don't do that. Let me ask you one more question.
What?
What do you think of the whole thing now?
Well, I...
Come on. What do you think?
I think you've got something, but the police haven't.
I was afraid of that. All right, Kling. Any objections if I keep going?
None for me, but you'll have to do it alone. As far as the department's concerned, the Roberts case is closed. I'd never get permission to work on it, Dan.
Not even on your own time?
That's different.
Okay. Keep in touch.
Yeah, I will. Meanwhile, you keep alive.
Well, there wasn't anything more I could do that night. Took my punctured arm and myself home and got some sleep. Not much, though, because I knew I was right and Kling was right. Only two people knew I'd be at Carpenter and Pastel at midnight. Morgan and Mrs. Roberts. Mrs. Roberts had called the police to report my call. Morgan hadn't. All Morgan had to do now was to lay low until Kirby was executed. But he had been worried enough to take a shot at me. Then I thought of something else. The next morning in my office...
Mr. Holliday?
Oh, good morning, Susie.
Your arm, it's in a sling.
Becoming, isn't it?
What happened?
I was shot.
Oh, who shot you?
William Morgan, I'm sure. But never mind that now. I want you to help me.
Well, sure, Mr. Holliday, but I won't get shot, will I?
Here, sit down at the typewriter.
All right.
Now, look, I've typed out a bunch of slips with, now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party.
With one arm?
Good enough. Now, you do the same. Go ahead.
I don't understand.
I'll explain while you type. Go ahead.
Okay.
The note left for Martin Kirby was typed. What I'm trying to do is to find out if the style of typing can be definite enough to pin on one person.
You mean I type differently from you?
Mm-hmm. I use hunt and peck, and you use the touch system.
Oh.
You see, Mrs. Roberts used to be a secretary. She'd use the touch system of typing. Martin Kirby could type, so could William Morgan.
Then what good will all this do you?
I don't know. I don't know. Okay, Susie, that's enough. Now, mix up the slips and pick one at random. Then you tell me who typed it.
All right. I typed that one.
How do you know?
It's smoother than yours.
Is that the only way you can tell?
Uh-huh.
Then if I type touch system, it'd be pretty tough to tell the slips apart.
Oh, sure. All touch system is smooth looking. The letters are, well, they're all about the same blackness.
Okay, that's another lead shot.
Gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Holliday.
Look at that clock. 12:10. Less than 12 hours left for Kirby. Susie, I'm as sure as I can be that Morgan's guilty. That he shot me last night.
Then why don't the police arrest him? It's dangerous for a man like that to be loose.
Yes, I think you're right, but I... Susie.
Uh-huh.
Remember what you said about conscience?
Mm-hmm.
Well, look, if Morgan was sure of himself, he wouldn't have tried that stunt last night. All right, because he did, it means that a little more work on him might make him break, huh?
You're not going to let him shoot at you again.
Oh, not if I can help it. But I am going to see him.
You will be careful, won't you, Mr. Holliday?
Susie, I have only one life to give my work. But it so happens, I like it. It took the rest of the day, but I learned all I could about Mr. William Morgan. And there wasn't one thing that pointed at him as a killer. But I was sure he'd killed Roberts and framed Kirby. He knew Kirby and Roberts had quarreled. He could have taken Kirby's gun from Kirby's desk at the office. He could have typed the note leading Kirby to Roberts' house. And among other things, he had been a demonstrator for a typewriter concern. How did that help? Answer, not at all. Because Mrs. Roberts and Kirby both typed touch system. That I found out when I read the report of the trial. Okay, I had one angle left. Work on Morgan. Work on him hard enough to crack him wide open. If it could be done. So that night, 2 hours before Martin Kirby was to die, I buzzed at Morgan's house.
Yes? What is it?
Mr. William Morgan?
Yes. Who are you?
I'm a writer.
I have nothing to say. Excuse me. Get your foot away.
Oh, just a minute. Did you receive a phone call last night?
Come in.
Thank you.
What about a phone call?
Did you have one last night?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But you let me in when I mentioned it.
Sit down.
Okay.
You hurt your arm.
Yes, it got in the way.
You mentioned a phone call?
Yes, I did.
Cigarette?
No, thanks. That ashtray's awfully full. You must have been smoking a lot.
So what?
Nervous, Mr. Morgan?
Now, look here. I've had enough of this. What do you want? And who are you?
My name's Holliday. I called you last night.
That was a gruesome joke, Holliday. One I didn't appreciate at all.
I wasn't trying to amuse you, Morgan.
Why did you make that call?
Before I answer that, take a look at your clock.
Well, what about it?
In 1 hour and 50 minutes, Martin Kirby will be executed for a murder he didn't commit.
Why don't you say what you've come to say?
Because I'm waiting for you to say something.
You mean you'd like me to say something that would... Oh, no.
Why didn't you tell the police about that call last night? Big belly laugh, huh?
Yes, so the police know that you made that call.
Yes, I...
Oh, that wasn't very bright of you, Mr. Holliday. No blackmailer would have told the police he made that call. If you knew anything and were planning to trap me, you'd have kept it to yourself, right?
Morgan grinned at me. He knew I'd walked right into it. His nervousness seemed to just ooze away. He lighted another cigarette and kept grinning at me through the smoke. Then...
Don't you think you'd better leave now, Holliday?
Morgan, there was a note, typewritten. You typed it.
Did I?
Yes. Maybe you don't know this, but that note can put you in Kirby's place.
Yes? How?
Well, there's a way of telling who typed a note. Every typist has a different touch. And when enlarged, the touch of one typist will show up differently from another's. Kirby's defense lawyer missed that bet. But I didn't.
You talk a great deal too much, Holliday.
But it's interesting conversation, isn't it?
I don't believe what you said.
No? Here's the note. The police lent it to me, and...
Yeah, that's all, Holliday. Stay sitting.
You really wanted that note, didn't you?
And I've got it.
And that gun in your hand. It's the same one you shot me with last night.
And this time it won't be in the arm.
No, I suppose not.
Look, Holliday. It's almost 10. In about 1 hour and a half, Kirby will be executed. Now, you settle down and wait until 11:30.
What do you mean?
Two birds with one stone. Kirby and you. At 11:30. Well, 11:25, Holliday. You and Kirby have 5 minutes.
You won't get away with it, Morgan.
Why not? If I kill you in my apartment, it'll be legal. Look.
What's that for?
Can't you guess? Papers scattered around, drawers ransacked. It's simple. I came in, surprised you rifling my apartment, and shot you. See?
With that gun?
Why not?
You know, I almost wish you would, Morgan. Because ballistics has the bullet taken from my arm, and if it matches the one that kills me tonight... You figure it out.
Why, you meddling fool. You'll be sorry.
Good work, Dan. With one arm, too. You better stay where you are, Morgan.
Kling. Hey, Kling, the phone, the penitentiary.
I took care of that an hour ago.
You did what?
Sure. I heard the whole thing from outside the window.
But you said the case was closed. You couldn't work on it.
I've got news for you, Danny boy. I'm off duty.
Said nobody could tell the difference between typists.
That he did, Susie. And a bluff about the bullet.
Well, any bluff in a poker game, Kling. Oh, by the way, let me ask you one question.
Yeah? What?
Why did you hold off until the last minute?
Oh, I had time. Morgan wouldn't dare kill you until after Kirby was executed at 11:30. So I looked at my watch and I figured I had time to get the headquarters, pull strings to stop the execution, and get back to you.
Lieutenant Kling!
What, Susie?
Look at your watch. It stopped.
Oh, that's nothing. It does that every once in a while. Just shake it and... Oh, holy cats.
Oh, no. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in... Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with an original story by Robert M. Light, adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and that of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. Box 13 is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
KMA-907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA-907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air. This is Sergeant Dan Meredith of Unit 99 at Headquarters, Police Department, City of Sacramento, California. My detail is to ride in Unit 99, our tape recorder-equipped radio car, and to respond whenever the dispatcher transmits a signal to one of our other units on duty somewhere in the city. At the scene, we make the recordings for this program. Now, to tell you more about Unit 99, here is our chief, James V. Hicks, Sacramento Police.
The job of a police officer is your protection. The cases you hear on this radio program are real cases. The police are real, the victims and the criminals are real. We are glad to provide Unit 99 and Sergeant Meredith so that you will hear how the police of a great city work night and day for your protection. Make no mistake about it. There are no actors on these tapes. They are real from beginning to end. Now to Unit 99 and Sergeant Dan Meredith on duty.
Units 2-2 and 2-4. 901 at 17th and F, Frank. Code 2. Check. KMA-907.
A code 2 on an accident at 17th and F, Frank. Motorcycles 22 and 24 are responding. Let's cover in with them. What's up?
This guy up here hit three cars. One of the guys is leaving. He's right up the street.
They're getting him.
I saw him in this car right here.
Oh, is this it over here?
We got three sports cars. He smashed in, sideswiped.
And where is he now, did you say?
We're holding him right here where his car stopped.
Where the other unit is?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go over there. Anybody hurt?
No. These are the individuals that...
Nobody. He wiped out the side of three cars back here.
Three of them.
Okay.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Raph. Is this the driver?
Supposedly the driver of the car, yeah. Now, what happened?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I must have dozed off from the wheel. No lie.
You been drinking tonight?
No, I haven't, honestly.
You haven't had anything to drink tonight?
No, nothing.
Would you go in and submit to a test with the doctor?
Yes, I will, yeah.
You will?
Yeah. Man, I was sleepy tonight.
Was this man here with you?
I don't think so.
No, nobody was with me.
You were all by yourself?
Yeah.
What seems to be so funny, my friend?
Well, you think I'm drinking, but I haven't been drinking, though.
Your eyes are quite dilated. What seems to be your trouble?
What caused you to weave all over the road?
I don't know. I was sleepy, man. I must have...
You don't look like you're sleepy now.
But I am sleepy.
Let's see your arms. Roll up your sleeves. Let's see you. Why are you so sleepy?
That looks like a new mark there.
Let's see your other arm.
Looks like scar tissue.
Yeah.
Are you sure you don't use a needle?
Nope.
Why are you shaking so much now for?
I'm cold. I had a jacket on.
It's not too cold out here.
Have you ever been arrested before?
No, never.
Why are you so sleepy?
Well, I guess I must have stayed up all night last night.
Do you know whether you stayed up all night or not?
Yeah.
Did you stay up all night?
Last night I did, yeah. Actually.
Did you stay up all day today?
Yes,
did. Did you work today?
No, I don't work today, no.
Well, you didn't work today at all? You were up all last night? All up, yeah. Up all today? You going to stay up all night tonight, too?
No, I mean, that's where I was going to go home. Right now.
Were you injured at all?
Injured?
Yeah.
No.
Were you hurt?
No.
You weren't hurt in the accident at all. Was there anybody else hurt, do you know?
No.
Do you know how many cars you hit?
No, I don't even know.
You don't know. You say that you followed him since you
yes.
On 12th Street.
Since 12th Street.
And he came underneath the underpass there.
Yes.
And he hit the curb under the underpass.
Yes.
As
yes.
He came out from there.
Yeah.
And you followed him from there. He turned left onto F Street, and you followed him down
yeah,
F Street.
Yeah, he stopped. There was a red light up here, and he stopped right out in the middle of the intersection. We didn't think he was going to stop. And then he stopped, and then he came one more block, and he was going to hit that sign up here. So where those things in the middle of the street
yes.
come the around.
Islands.
So
the
he decided
there.
To come around. I don't think he was going to turn, but he realized that he was going to hit those signs, so he turned. He turned in this lane, the right-hand
lane.
Right-hand
lane
yeah.
Traffic.
And then he came down here, and we followed him to get his license number because we thought he might be drunk. And we followed him up to here, and then he hit those three cars and pulled up here. And we got up here right away.
You got here right away,
yeah.
And you can identify him as the driver
yeah.
of the car.
I looked at him. I took a good
you
look
at good
him.
Look
he
at
was
him.
Right next to me.
Garfield, you handed me some pills here. Where were they taken from?
He took them out of his pocket here in the back seat. He stated he hasn't been drinking, but he has his... small bottle of pills. He stated he's been to a show tonight. Took four of these pills. The pills on the bottle say for nervousness and say to take only one tablet at a time. Evidently, four would make a person either unstable as this gentleman is tonight.
What does this pill or these pills consist of?
I don't know.
Why is it you took four of them?
I don't know. I just wanted to take four. That was all.
You wanted to take four?
Yeah.
You must have had some reason for it.
No, it wasn't good enough.
Do you get these from a doctor's prescription?
Yeah.
What did your doctor give them to you for?
Today.
What for did he give them to you?
For nervousness right there.
Well, why did you start going to the doctor?
Oh, I just like to have those things, you know, because when I sing, you know, I sing and then...
Well, in other words, you take these pills just to brace yourself when you sing.
Yeah.
No, do you sing publicly?
Yeah, sing publicly, yeah.
In other words, actually, there's nothing wrong with you. You just take these pills to help you out, to brace yourself.
Yeah.
Same as some people drink, you take pills. Have you ever taken these pills just for the thrill of it before?
You mean just for kicks?
Yeah.
No. Four pills.
Have you ever taken four pills at a time before?
Yeah, I guess a lot of times, but it never... affected me this way as it did like tonight.
What's the largest number of pills you've ever taken at one time? file, I guess. Did you feel you were capable of driving a car after taking four or five pills?
I don't know, you know. I mean, I don't know, because when I was coming out of the movie, you know, today, over at Del Paso Heights.
Yeah.
And man, I was sleepy. I mean.
In other words, you knew you shouldn't be driving. You felt unconscious.
I even fell asleep inside the show.
But yet you got out of the car.
You know, when I got in my car and I started coming home, geez, that's where I was going to go right now, home.
Well, what are you going to do, Garfield?
We'll take him down and have the doctor examine him, finish up the report here, and it depends on what the doctor says down at the emergency.
They should be here now. Let's go in the emergency. Doctor, what is your conclusion on this driver?
My conclusions are that I believe this man has not been consuming alcohol, but his ability to operate an automobile is impaired due to probably consumption of some type of drug.
Rath, you have the final on the doctor's examination, don't you?
Yes, I do.
What are you going to do now?
Well, we're going to take this man up and place him in a city jail and charge him with violation of Section 506B of the California Vehicle Code, which is driving under the influence of a barbiturate or other drug.
Influence of a drug was just as dangerous as a drunk driver. Further investigation revealed that he actually had taken at least 8 of the tranquilizing pills. At the emergency hospital, his reactions and a sobriety examination were virtually the same as those of an intoxicated person. He damaged 3 cars to the extent of about $850, and he was lucky he didn't kill or injure at least himself.
Unit 3, 940A, regarding a pickpocket at the Cuba Cafe, 4th and Capitol. Okay, 3, KMA 907.
That was a call for Unit 3, pickpocket at Cuba Cafe. That's in the lower end of town, about 4th and Capitol. We better go in with him. Now we're here at the Cuba Cafe before the unit. Here comes a fellow up now. Turn the window down. Yes, who called us?
I'm the one.
What do you want?
Somebody lift his wallet, see?
Lifted whose wallet?
Here.
Where is he?
It's the man down here on the right, one down here on the, in a raincoat.
You stand by here, we'll be back.
All right.
Davies, one of those 3 fellas going down there just picked this guy's pocket. You want to go with us?
Yeah.
Right up here ahead of us. This fellow's victim is back at the Cuba. And he claims one of these fellows is one of them. Okay, let's get up. Now get over there with your hands against the wall, will you?
Where'd you guys just come from?
I just walked up the street here.
From where?
I've been in the Cuba.
There goes the unit. Had the original call on it.
Okay.
You want my dog? They're circling around there. They'll probably pick the victim up and bring him here.
Did you ever hear Ordinance 1817 of 4th
Series? Just a minute. I'll call the unit up here with the victim. Unit 99 to KMA 907. Will you inform the unit that went on that pickpocket case to meet the beat officers at 1207 number 4 Street?
Unit 24.
Chef, 1207 4th
Street.
Unit 3, meet the beat officers,
1207 4th
Street.
1207 4th.
Chef.
5J. That's right. This man's an ex-convict. He's on parole.
Where'd you fall from?
Right here, sir.
What was the place you stuck up here in Sacramento?
Stuck up? Oh, in 51?
Yeah, armed robbery.
That was this Shell's
Station around the corner.
Yes, sir.
There's a unit. I'll get over here. Which one?
Well, the raincoat on the right.
Raincoat? He's an ex-con.
This one here?
Yeah.
He's an ex.
You shake him down, Dave?
Yeah.
How about that?
I didn't look at his shoes, though, or his socks.
This man?
Yeah.
This one here.
Right.
Not the second man.
No.
The first man right here.
This man right here.
What have I schooled them did to this fellow? If I may ask.
You want to tell the whole story?
Yeah, I'll tell the whole story to you. Last in a funeral bar, he bumped into me. He said, "I excuse you, I bumped into you." And I reached back and missed my vehicle. Just as he bumped into me, I missed my vehicle.
And had you had it...
I hadn't been a fool until he bumped into me.
How much money did you have in it?
I've supposed to beat him for something. I'd like to have...
About $20.
Question the fellow there. I just talked to him in the restroom over drinking out of a bottle. This fella here.
Which one? Him?
This one.
All right. What was it?
I just talked with him.
What did he tell you?
He and I had a drink.
We had a drink in the...
We talked. The usual... It's one thing or another that you do in the restroom, having a drink, and I walked out. When I walked out of the bar, someone came out behind me and the door hit me. I bumped into this fella, I begged his pardon.
Did this man grab the wallet?
I don't know who. I don't even know if anyone lost any wallet. When the door hit me, I bumped into him, I begged his pardon, stood in front of the place, just walked away from there until this fella came down. Where is he? This fella came down there and told me that the girl wanted to see me up here in Stanley's. That's where I was headed. See, I have no reason to take nothing from nobody. I work every day. I make $155 every 2 weeks. I'm a cook. I'm an ex-con, yeah. The parole officer got me that job, and I've been working there ever since.
These other fellas with you all the time, these other two?
This fella here was in the Cuba when I come out of the restroom. He doesn't know anything about me.
He's waiting on another guy
other than
to
just
come in here to take me
when I came out. May I fasten this up?
Yeah. Go ahead.
When I came out of the Cuban, stood in front of it. Pickpocket is not something that I've been convicted of, although I've been convicted twice out of San Francisco for burglary and here for armed robbery. Now that I have a job, I don't have to do nothing. I've never...
The other officers backtracking here to see if they can locate the wallet they might have discarded. That's Devers and Davies are backtracking. McKnight, beat officer, and patrolman Morrison is here with the fellows. Here comes Devers.
It's about that long.
But I haven't.
And open like a book.
Then I wouldn't have no reason to.
Davis. Did you find anything?
No.
This fellow's pretty positive. He's been drinking a little, though. But this other boy that's with him seems to think that he had had it just prior to the pocket being picked.
Did you find a wallet on the street at all?
No, I looked here up in the corner and gutter and everything. I have cars and doors and everything.
I see Davies has gone all the way down to the Cuba. He's on the way back now.
There's quite a gang there. They could have passed anywhere.
Yeah. Well, this fellow's pretty positive that this other man took it, so.
Oh, he definitely took the guy's wallet, but he threw it away.
Did anybody see it?
Three or four people down there told me he took the wallet.
Did he take it or was it given to him?
He took it.
Well, Sergeant, we search him on the street here and unable to locate the wallet. And he's con-wise. He's been in before. He's an ex-convict. And evidently he's discarded the wallet somewhere. So we're going to book him into court and let the court decide what they're going to do on the case.
If this man did steal a wallet, there was no physical evidence of it. Neither the wallet nor its contents was found. However, the victim was positive in his identification of the suspect, and so were other witnesses at the cafe where the theft is supposed to have taken place. The suspect was charged, however, under one of the many sections of the vagrancy law.
Unit 4. An attempted suicide at W. William. Code 2. Check for Tammy 907.
A Unit 4 just got a code 2 on an attempted suicide. Code 2 means hurry, but no red lights or siren. We'll check it out.
Oh,
Units here, in fact, two of them are.
On the 29th.
Officers Dennis and his partner are bringing a young lady out from the house. County?
Yeah, sleeping pills.
Sleeping pills? Are you...
I'm her sister.
Could you give us a little information on this?
Yeah, I guess I can. She's just despondent, upset. She took about, she said 12 or 15, codeine.
I see.
And her husband called me, and I tried to get her to go to the emergency hospital and have her stomach pumped, but I can't do anything with it.
Yes, we'll meet you over there. Bring the young lady with you? I shall. Go ahead, please.
And he called me at... about 1 o'clock, and I just dashed over, and I couldn't get her to drink any black coffee.
How long has this been now?
Oh, I think it's been about an hour and a half or 2 hours since you took them.
Well, I'll rush you right over now and have the authorities over there work on her. How old a woman is she?
Oh, let's see. She's 29.
29. Despondent. Mm-hmm. Did she say she was going to take her life?
Well, not exactly. She said she just was tired. She's ill a lot. I mean, she's had migraine headaches and... she's been through a lot, I know that, but then I don't know why she...
Did you say she was tired of living?
Well, she said she was just tired. She didn't say she was tired of living. She said, I'm just tired.
And has she done this before?
No.
All right, then, would you care to go with us over to the county?
Yeah, I guess I'll miss. I just...
Okay, get in the back seat, please. Well, this is the door to the emergency ward. Go right in.
She's despondent over a son that she, a baby she had that died.
Oh, I see. How's she look?
Well, she don't look too bad. She says she took them about 11:30, and she claims to have taken 12 or 13 Emperin compounds. However, I think that if she took that much, why, it'd probably show a reaction more than she has now.
And that's over 2 hours ago. Was, yeah. Are these the pills?
Yeah. Emperin.
Yeah.
How many was in there? Do you know that she took that many?
No, there's quite a few in there. I just got that pill the other day.
You did, huh?
Yeah, not the whole bottle. Just, I think it was about 14.
Well, she took that many, they're real slow working, I'll tell you.
Now she's on the gurney here. The nurse is talking to her. Officer Green is standing by.
Just exactly why did you do it?
I don't know. I just despondent over my boy. I just can't get over it. It's been 4 years and I just can't get over it.
You lost your boy 4 years ago?
Almost 4 years.
Do you have any more children? Don't you think they want you around? Well, it's kind of a silly thing to do, then. What are they going to do without you? Huh? You don't want anything like this to happen again. You'll be all right. You don't have to worry. Did you ever try that? You ever do this before?
Never.
This is the first time you've ever tried anything. Just felt kind of rough tonight? Is that what it is? How old was your boy?
9 and a half.
9 and a half? How old is your other boy?
He's 10 now.
He's 10 now? Let's see, where's he at now, tonight?
He's home.
You don't want to do this now again, I mean that.
I'm sorry.
That little boy needs you.
No, he's his daddy's boy.
Well, he needs his mother, too. No. All children do.
My boy's gone.
No, your other boy needs you just as bad as this other boy that you've lost. They all need you just the same.
Dennis, what are you going to do now?
Well, we've already called in a casualty report. The doctor's going to go ahead and pump her stomach. I believe she's going to be all right.
Doctor, I want to ask you about her condition. How is it?
Well, she doesn't appear to be too serious at the present time. We'll have to observe her for about 4 to 6 hours. Maximum effect from the drug will be about 4 hours from now. Judging from the amount that she took, it's probably a borderline toxic dose.
Not serious.
It doesn't appear to be serious at the present time.
The young woman who took the overdose of painkilling compound recovered. Her sister acted wisely in calling the police. That is a point I have made frequently. In time of trouble or difficulty, you'll find your police department ready and able to provide assistance. never hesitate to call them.
This is Unit 99. These on-the-scene tape recordings were provided by the Sacramento Police Department and were made on duty by Sergeant Dan Meredith in Unit 99. Your host is Chief James V. Hicks of the Sacramento Police Department.
KMA 907, Sacramento Police. Unit 99, are you in the clear?
Unit 99 to KMA 907. Unit 99, Sergeant Meredith, 909, in service, on the air.
Unit 99 has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's it for Case Closed this week. I hope you enjoyed our stories this time. You can find more from Unit 99, Box 13, Case Closed, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll find our Shoutcast stream there and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, you can do so through the website. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.